municipal reform is coming to a local government near you. Premier Doug Ford's government's plan to appoint regional chairs became law this month. That means 8 of the largest regional governments in Ontario will now have their leaders handpicked by the province.
We're not handpicking. We're going to look carefully at resumes. We're going to look carefully at who has the skill set to come and do this.
With more control over budget processes and council priorities, similar to what we saw with the strong mayor powers back in 2022, while Niagara and Simcoe regional councils will be forced to downsize. Ontario's Housing Minister Rob Flack said this is all about delivering faster on key issues like housing and fiscal responsibility.
This is getting, in a polite way, politicians in a way out of the way. It's worked in York, it's worked in Peel, we think it'll work in the other regions in the province.
But the NDP and the Greens have called the move a serious attack on local democracy.
This is about Doug Ford doing anything he can to try and control local democracy and take it out of the hands of local decision makers and take power away from people.
Critics like the New Democrat MPP Jeff Birch have said the new legislation gives what will be an unelected seated position unprecedented powers over regional councils, as the regional chair sits at the head of multiple cities. They look after police, transit, waste management, and watershed conservation in Ontario for lower-tier municipalities. That includes smaller cities like St. Catharines and townships such as Fort Erie. So what does this mean for smaller municipalities across Ontario? And is local governance in trouble? That's Toronto Mayor Olivia Chow on the morning of May's council meeting. Whether it's speed cameras, transit plans, or a new runway for jets, provincial governments are calling the shots, which begs the question, how much power do municipal governments really have? To find out what the future holds for local governance in Toronto and for our northern neighbors, we spoke with municipal expert and local journalist Dean Iorfita. He's a veteran public servant and for 15 years worked as the city clerk and director of council services for the city of Niagara Falls. He's also a writer for The Pointer, a local news site where he's written extensively about various attempts at Niagara amalgamation and how having an appointed chair could change the fabric of local regional government. He joins me now. Hey, Dean, thank you so much for coming on Met Radio CJTM. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Hopefully I will be able to fill you in on the governance situation in Niagara. Appreciate you reaching out to me and having me as your guest today.
Maybe let's start with first impressions. You've written extensively about what this piece of legislation would mean for the Niagara Regional Council. What was your first reaction when you heard about this?
I was flabbergasted actually by it, because there's no precedent for it, at least in, you know, Ontario municipal circles. You know, you can make the point that the strong mayor powers are being carried over, so there's some continuity there. But extending that power to appointed, what will likely be progressive conservative sympathizing individuals is undemocratic. I mean, that's been the criticism of it. Those aren't necessarily my words. One of the Niagara regional councillors, who's the mayor of Fort Erie, Wayne Redicop's been in municipal government since the late 90s. He's a lawyer by trade. And at the last regional council meeting, he said, we're sailing into undemocratic waters, which is concerning.
You brought up how some critics are saying these chairs would perhaps effectively be doing the bidding of the Progressive Conservative Party of Doug Ford's government. I know some councillors have been quite vocal about this at recent council meetings. New Tecumseh Deputy Mayor Stephanie McKellen said at Simcoe County's meeting last month that the proposed changes could pose a threat to the integrity of local democratic systems.
Democracy is dying, and this is what it looks like. This is the beginning. I don't think the province has any business appointing our head of council. To me, this reeks of provincial political control.
You know, under this act, the province will be able to wield a significant amount of power, including the ability to veto mayoral decisions. The minister, Rob Flack, for Housing and Municipal Affairs, has said that they're still working on a vetting process for selecting chairs. He said that the appointed candidate should be, quote, credible, qualified, capable. How do you think this fares with the people that you've heard from in the Niagara region?
Well, we have an example in the Niagara region that was an unsuccessful example. What happened was our regional chair, Jim Bradley, passed away in September of last year. The government decided to appoint Bob Gale. Now, in fairness to Mr. Gale, he was a member of regional council. He was a sitting member of regional council, so he had some electoral legitimacy of being a Niagara Falls rep on the council, but he wasn't the rep that gained the most votes. You know, he had the credential in the fact that he had been chairing the Niagara Parks Commission, which was an appointment also done by the provincial government, and the fact that he had run as a conservative candidate in the provincial election in 2022. As you may or may not be aware, what happened with Mr. Gale was he took office in late December. In February, without any consultation with his regional colleagues, he sent a letter to the minister saying, I'm thinking that Niagara should become either one big mega city or four city model. But, you know, Mr. Gale hadn't been given any mandate to do this. Maybe the province gave him orders. He claimed otherwise. That created quite a stir in Niagara, a lot of opposition, whether it was from sitting politicians, a number of the mayors, especially of the smaller municipalities, who feared that their municipality would be swallowed up by the bigger three or four municipalities in Niagara. So there was concern about that. And despite not having any mandate from his regional colleagues, he was pursuing it. And who knows how far it would have got. What ended up happening was it was reported that Mr. Gale had a signed copy of Mein Kampf, you know, by Adolf Hitler. So you have to question what has been the vetting process up to this point, and how can we as taxpayers and the electorate, how can we be guaranteed that the best candidate is being picked? And as you mentioned, you know, the notion that the unelected chair may be able to veto certain decisions by the council is concerning. I mean, that's, you know, that's unheard of. With regard to the strong mayor powers, there's been some discussion that it's not much different than some of the U.S. jurisdictions where the mayor has some other extra powers. But those people are elected as mayors. And, you know, in this case, it's just an individual that, you know, is being appointed. The minister kind of has described that person almost as the meeting organizer. But, you know, will that chair have voting powers? Will that chair just break ties? I mean, it seems based on the strong mayor legislation, that chair will have power to veto things and be able to get things through with only one third of the members around the regional council table. So, you know, there's a lot of what ifs. There's a lot of questions that still need to be answered.
You mentioned strong mayor powers. Under the Better Regional Governance Act, appointed chairs will be given strong chair powers. Maybe we could talk a little bit about how these powers are different from the strong mayor powers we got back in 2022.
I mean, I read one of the standing hearing committees where they actually asked one of the bureaucrats in the department about what will those strong chair powers look like. And that individual indicated that they would be pretty much the same. I mean, strong mayor powers is still relatively new. It hasn't been challenged in any sort of legal manner. Like, no one has filed anything to say this mayor in such and such a municipality has overused the strong mayor power. So there's still a lot of questions on that. And, you know, giving that power to unelected people is concerning. At least if the strong mayor in St. Catharines or Niagara Falls or Welland exercises his strong mayor power in a way that the electorate doesn't like, that mayor will have to answer to it the next time he or she runs for re-election. So there's that accountability.
Talking about how strong mayors are mirroring regional chairs, like, what about the budgeting process? There's been some success maybe with moving these processes along more efficiently. Do you feel like regional chairs could have that same effect?
I think so. I mean, I think the one thing I will say is that the strong mayor powers related to the budgeting process have been positive. It's been a better process. Like, what used to happen when I was a municipal clerk was that it was all or nothing. So you'd have councillors who were opposed to one line item or two line items in a budget and would vote against the entire budget because of that. With the strong mayor powers now, those councillors could propose amendments. Those amendments will either get passed or will be defeated. So the process has actually, I think, improved for budgetings. I'm not sure that any chair, appointed or otherwise, has that much influence over the budget process. They could obviously give their indication of priorities, what they see as a priority, but sometimes those priorities are driven by the fact that the sewer main burst and things like that. You know, a lot of times it's corrective measures that need to be put in place with existing infrastructure, which, you know, that's been a bigger issue at municipalities, the infrastructure gap, not having the funding to invest in wastewater projects. You know, those are costly. You know, we've got facilities that are 100 years old that are under the jurisdiction of the upper tier municipality. Policing costs have increased dramatically. You know, downloading from the province. Those chairs are going to have to deal with those things. You know, maybe if they're appointed by the province, will they be able to maybe get more funding floated down from the province? Maybe that'll be a positive. Who knows?
So amidst all these changes, Ontario is continuing to struggle with the housing crisis.
For far too long, the path to home building has been mired in delays, unnecessary costs, and redundancies. We are changing this.
Rob Flack has said that appointed chairs will make regions more, quote, nimble to accomplish important tasks such as expediting housing approvals and construction. Do you think that there have been examples where mayors have used these powers and they've been successful? Or, like, what new inroads have Niagara mayors kind of made?
In St. Catharines, Mayor Sisko has used his mayoral powers, you know, sort of outlining priorities, which I think to a certain extent is what those powers are for. But what's helped St. Catharines more is that they had a successful application to the federal Build Canada Fund, and they've used the monies that they received, which I think was in the neighborhood of $25 million. I may be off a bit on that figure, to engage in certain initiatives that have probably led to some additional housing starts in that community. In Niagara Falls, there's, and I know this because I'm from Niagara Falls, there's a lot of approvals for subdivisions and housing, but economically, the developers aren't proceeding with those because right now, there's an affordability crisis. It's not a housing crisis. It's an affordability crisis that people cannot afford to buy those houses. Older folks are staying in their houses, so those sort of startup homes aren't necessarily available for young couples or young individuals to get into the housing market. So having a non-elected chair, I don't know how that is going to speed up any process or lead to more housing starts. You know, Minister Flack even mentioned that the week that the Bill 100 got introduced by the conservatives, they had also introduced a legislation earlier in the week that gave some incentives related to, I believe, removing development charges and the like, which will probably have more success in generating housing starts, if anything does, than the Bill 100 things. I mean, I think the Bill 100 issues are more the conservative government exerting more control over municipalities. And, you know, I'm not the only one who's observed that. I think a lot of critics of the legislation, a lot of politicians have made that claim as well. You know, even AMO, which represents the 444 municipalities in Ontario, at the standing committee hearing, their executive director called the unelected chairs, you know, basically an undemocratic process. And, you know, other things like the number of politicians in Niagara, to me, is a bit of a red herring. Because if you take the 126 politicians in Niagara, most who are part-time, it's equivalent to about 30 or 35 full-time politicians in a Toronto or Peel region. That's what the cost is. So this isn't a matter of cost. Is the region of Niagara not nimble enough? Perhaps, but, you know, there's a way to structurally deal with that. Cut the committee process out of the equation. Just have two-day regional council meeting to get all the business done. You know, as a former municipal clerk, there's ways that they can speed up processes if they feel that things are slowing down. But the actual generation of building permits happens at the lower tier municipalities. It doesn't happen at the region. It doesn't really add up as to why this is necessary to speed up housing starts when it's other aspects, and affordability is probably the number one cause of why housing starts have not increased to the point that the government, all governments, and basically all politicians would like to see.
The minister has made arguments about how this could save taxpayer dollars or lead to more efficient decision-making. What would you say to that?
Minister Flack has even sort of admitted candidly, there's not going to be great savings in Niagara by cutting even the 19 councillors at regional council. It works out to about $1 million, which is a quarter of a percentage point on the budget. It's minuscule. And then, you know, what we usually see in any sort of municipal governance is that when the elected representatives are taking on more tasks, more responsibilities, they usually are compensated for taking on more tasks and more responsibilities. Will there be the need for more support staff? Currently, most of the councillors in Niagara are part-time. They don't have staff. They don't have office space. The, you know, the exceptions are maybe the mayors of the three or four biggest municipalities. So it's not going to be a money-saving thing. As far as nimbleness and process, there's ways you can speed up internal governance processes, but how are they going to do that with, you know, the 12 mayors? How is their time going to be allocated? A lot of times, I mean, this is sort of an observation, the mayors seem less engaged on regional business than those de facto regional councillors, the directly elected ones. They seem to be more committed. They're on more committees at the region. You know, the mayors are busy with their own municipalities. Some of the Niagara mayors have jobs. I mean, they have real jobs, for want of a better phrase. I mean, you know, How is that going to play out? The mayors of Niagara seem to be supportive of this move, although it was probably the lesser of two evils for them compared to this possibility that was floated in February about amalgamation to one city or four cities, you know, which had been talked about for some time. And in fact, the three mayors of the big cities in Niagara, St. Catharines, Niagara Falls, and Welland, supported Premier Ford during the last election and the discussion. And I wrote a story at the time. What was surmised was that Ford was going to pursue a four-city model for Niagara, and those three mayors, you know, whether they would be appointed to chair their mega cities or not, there was always that speculation that that might happen. this is different, this change to regional government, and especially the unelected regional chair.
So the government is going to work with Niagara municipalities to develop what they call a weighted voting framework to facilitate this kind of transition. Simcoe County, though, already has this weighted voting system in place. How could this framework work in Niagara, and what would that mean for the region? What kind of impact could that have, in your opinion?
Well, the concern is how do you do that equitably, where if you did a representation by population or a weighted voting by population, I mean, the mayor of St. Catharines would have oodles more voting power than the mayor of Waynefleet.
Right. The township of Waynefleet has a population of around 7,000 people, whereas the city of St. Catharines is much larger, closer to 160,000 people.
So there's concern, obviously, with the smaller municipalities, especially ones that are more sort of rurally oriented, that their voice won't be heard. Part of the reasons why the government decided to step in with Simcoe County, from what I understand, is because the original vote for weighted voting didn't pass because they had a triple majority system. And when it went to their council for a vote, it was tied, so it lost. So that kind of annoyed the government, and they decided to, you know, start pulling the strings, which is what the concern, I think, is with a lot of smaller municipality politicians, and I think a lot of the electorate. Provincial government is not allowing for local decision making. They're trying to have some control over what municipalities are doing. Now, yes, municipalities are creatures of the province, but up until these strong mayor powers and up until the Bill 100, there were local decision making that was taking place and was ruling the day, and there's a possibility that that may not be the case moving forward.
And Dean, you were talking about accountability earlier. Do you feel that there are sufficient guardrails in place right now to prevent misuse of power?
Well, it's vague in the sense that we don't know what the process will be for appointing those unelected chairs. I mean, I assume that those chairs will have some municipal background, maybe had been appointments in other government bodies. But currently, the process as far as how that selection will take place, what the credentials will be, if that hasn't been determined, you know, can there be a recall situation? What if 2/3 of the mayors vote to remove the chair? That might be something that could be looked at. Like I said earlier, with mayors who alienate their electorate, the proof is in the pudding when they're not elected next time around. You would think that they would engage the regional council to be, as opposed to the current regional council or the regional mayors in Niagara, you know, as far as working out whether it's weighted voting, whether it's some of these other guardrails. You know, when is that going to happen? How's that process going to play out? Or is it just going to be a dictate from the province, which is probably, you know, more likely than not. There's a lot of power being afforded to the minister. The minister may do certain things and the minister may override certain things.
We want to get back to elections, but just briefly, looking outside of the Niagara region, you know, given your knowledge in civil law and municipal government structures, how do you think these appointed chairs could impact local governance in other regions? For example, our stations in Toronto, Mayor Olivia Chow is already fighting the first special economic zone that has become like the new jet airport that's going
to be
put up at Billy Bishop. Yeah, they're also paving over a park near the harbor front for a parking lot. But if you could just speak on that.
I don't, you know, once again, you've got an unelected chair who will have power that no chair has had in the past. I mean, I think, you know, what I alluded to, it's really going to come down to who those regional chairs are, you know, what kind of background they bring to the table, you know, what kind of issues are they going to be pursuing separate from the councils that they're overseeing, you know, are there going to be, you know, issues where there's, you know, push-pull kind of thing. Those upper tier municipalities where there's a divergence of population size Are the big ones going to gang up on the little ones? Are rural municipalities going to lose some of their powers? Are they going to be ignored in the grand scheme of things? Will we be seeing more housing in communities that can't sustain or support more housing? Will we see more housing at all, like, you know, due to the economic situations? I think there's concerns about the legislation. I think, though, municipalities can adapt, you know, not to say that I endorse. I think the legislation is flawed, but will those municipalities adapt in some way?
And looking ahead, we have elections coming up province-wide this fall. Turnouts, however, have been notoriously bad. In Burlington, Niagara Falls, and St. Catharines, the turnout was close to 1 in 4 in the last election in 2022. Do you think this will have any effect on how people are voting or what candidates they're backing coming into the election period?
I hope so. I'm a little concerned in Niagara. I mean, I think there was a big groundswell of regular public, you know, not the people who are kind of in the municipal bubble, but, you know, there was a lot of concern about these possibilities of forced amalgamation, which I think would have generated an increased voter turnout. I think for most voters who are maybe not as engaged, they're not going to see anything differently when they go to vote in October. I mean, I don't know how many are even going to notice that they're not voting for regional councillors. Some may realize it, some may know that that's happening, and some may not know, and some may not miss it. I mean, hopefully somebody will do some sort of polling on that in Niagara about, you know, whether it has any implication on voter turnout. The fact that the 12 lower tier municipalities are still in existence, I think will mean that those turnouts will be relatively the same. My observation over the years is that turnout is dictated by like a hot button topic. You know, so there may be some pushback on some of the mayors that maybe supported amalgamation. Will they see it at the poll? But then it also usually comes down to a strong mayoral race. That almost dictates turnout more than anything else. Now, interestingly, in Niagara, a few of the regional councillors that were on a Niagara Regional Council, directly elected ones, have put their names in to run for mayor in their municipalities. So we've already seen 3 examples of that. So already early, there's some strong mayoral races possible in Grimsby and Welland. You know, I don't know that turnout will, it definitely won't spike, but hopefully people are a little more engaged because of the publicity in Niagara. But they're also, I think, breathing a sigh of relief that they're still able to vote for their lower tier local municipalities.
Thank you so much, Gene.
Thank you, Gimza. I appreciate it.